Welcome to episode 8 of the N3SP podcast, a production of the National Security Strategic Studies Partnership, or N3SP. Our guest today is Charlie Krause, who's soon to be the capture manager at True Anomaly. Prior to this, he was acting manager for the Global Situational Awareness Business Development Team at Lockheed Martin Space in Denver, Colorado. Charlie graduated from the Air Force Academy in 2013 and served for 6 years as an intelligence officer. Now, as with all episodes, the opinions and ideas of the speakers here do not necessarily reflect the positions of any government organization, academic institution, or commercial entity, and should not be construed to do so. So with that as an introduction, welcome, Charlie.
Thank you, Darren. Again, honored to be a part of this great program, and thank you for all the continued work you're doing on N3SP and associated programs with the cadets. It's always great to be a part of it in however way we can.
Thank you. And I want to point out that Charlie was part of the founding participant group in the first of the N3SP workshops back in fall of 2021 and brought some interesting perspectives from the commercial sector to a discussion we had there about different ways that the commercial sector and allies work as cooperative partners in security space. So again, thanks for helping getting the whole program started about 2 years ago.
Of course. Yeah, it was an honor. Kathy Toby was one who put us together and said, Charlie, can you do this? And I was like, of course, anything to help the academies and the associated academia and other areas of industry.
Okay, well, what I'd like to do is have you talk about your initial career path coming out of the Air Force Academy, and then your switch to the commercial sector, and in particular, what took you from being an Air Force intelligence officer, and I haven't asked you how much of your exposure in intel was to space, but what sort of took you into space and space security, and then you know, we'll talk a little bit about what you've done at Lockheed, and then we'll end up discussing what True Anomaly is up to, because I wasn't aware of a lot of its work until, you know, we started this discussion about setting up the podcast. So I think folks would probably like to understand a little bit more about what's going up there in the southern parts of Denver. So let's start with your graduation from the academy. You went off to Intel school, as many people do. You went to San Angelo. And then where did they assign you coming out of the great green Texas countryside?
All right. Well, no, thank you again. The Intel school experience was fantastic. That was my first choice coming out of the Air Force Academy. It was basically between that and pilot. I was an undergrad in political science, focusing mainly on Western Europe. Foreign area studies really was the degree name. And I thought for a long time, both my wife and I, now wife and I, when we first started dating, that we would be working in the Foreign Service, working in the State Department team, or, you know, however that could manifest. And so that's one of the reasons I was interested in Intel, wanted to go the regional affairs and political affairs route. But as my wife went through law school and then I went to San Angelo, we kind of thought, you know, maybe there's a different path and eventually maybe it looks more like a private sector transition to the corporate arena. So when I moved down to San Angelo, again, had a great time at Intel school. It's a wonderful program down there. And then with that said, I got assigned to Scott Air Force Base in the greater St. Louis area after or as I was about to graduate from Intel school. And that was my first choice, in part because I wanted to be a little bit closer to my wife. And the mission we supported was primarily VIP airlift and other forms of airlift for the 375th Air Mobility Wing. And I also deployed a Qatar to support the KC-135 tanker squadrons out there in 2015 and 2016. And back in St. Louis, our main supporting COCOM or COCOM that we supported was Southern Command. So really unique mission, primarily supported C-21 operations, and it was a great look at not only regional intel, but getting familiar with global intel as we sent our pilots as well as security forces, logisticians, and other teams abroad.
So what brought you then to Colorado, and then more specifically got you interested in doing space security stuff?
Okay, so being in the ultimate goal was before, both for my wife and I, was being back in Denver permanently. I'm originally from the greater Denver area, Littleton and Centennial specifically. My wife and I took turns following each other. She came down to St. Louis, and then she got a job in Omaha, which I was up on the assignment cycle, got to be stationed at Offutt, did RC-135 operations as an information integration officer, and then another deployment, had a great time there. It's kind of halfway between NSA work, halfway between Air Force operations, really, you know, tremendous people. Can't speak highly enough of the team out there, specifically in the 97th Intelligence Squadron. And then the ultimate goal being out in Colorado, or wanting to be back in Colorado, was to be assigned to Buckley Air Force Base at the time, now Space Force Base, to the 566 or other units that did a lot of intelligence fusion and space work. Unfortunately, was not able to get an assignment at the at Buckley, but I was, soon knew in 2019, 2020 timeframe that I would get out of the military. And I was looking at all sorts of different, large, small contractors, had an MBA. So I wanted to make sure I got into the business realm in some capacity. And after, many, many times, getting rejected, probably about 200 applications and only two solid offers, I was able to come on board at Lockheed Martin as finance and business operations estimating specialist for the special programs line of business, which essentially is, intelligence community customer, large national systems.
Fill that in, and we'll have to let other people fill that in with their imaginations and not go into details there. But your last title, as we introduced you, was Global Situational Awareness Business Development. Now, for those that aren't necessarily space experts, because we've covered a lot of ground in the various podcasts here, we did the first couple were focused on space, but we also done some nuclear stuff, some ethnic conflict, and the like. So we're coming back here to space. So situational awareness, would you explain that in layman's terms for the audience here?
Okay, so at the most basic level, global situational awareness refers to assets, in Lockheed's case, satellites that are Earth-facing. So, and it can be other areas, not just Earth too, but with that said, they, whether it's via commercial or other means, they are able to detect and monitor activities on Earth. So kind of a broad swath of capabilities and possibilities there. But again, mostly a national security mission. Sorry for the background noise. Mostly a national security mission, and really anything that we could gather under the business umbrella that was Earth-facing or other planetary bodies, kind of with that traditional, Lockheed Martin heritage in that arena, if that makes sense.
And the situational awareness point specifically is you need to be aware of what's in orbit around you so that you cannot have a conflict, either physical, electromagnetic, or otherwise interfere with each other so that you would have a disruption that would impair those services you're talking about delivering, correct?
Yeah, so generally, so that straddles a little bit of multiple business areas or multiple lines of business at Lockheed and elsewhere. So when we're talking global situational awareness in this context, it basically means looking at Earth and the surface of the Earth, everything, down happening on the Earth's surface and maybe a little bit above, again, depending on the mission, more of domain awareness and space security, that's handled by other lines of business and entities within Lockheed Martin. And it's something we can talk more about as I get into the True Anomaly role, which is more traditionally focusing on that mission. So that's, again, much more of the space domain and space security awareness side, whereas global situational awareness is much more Earth-facing or planetary body-facing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I appreciate you making that distinction, because I was more familiar with the overall space situational awareness concept, which then feeds into the more modern space domain awareness. So I guess, space situational awareness, just again, to keep it simple for listeners, is knowing what's up there. Right, for the reasons we talked about, non-interference, either physically or electromagnetically or otherwise. And then domain awareness, I guess, would you say that's adding in the element not only is what is up there, but maybe what are they doing? And,
yes.
Be a little bit more predictive about what may happen involving any of the multiple systems that are in orbit right now, in any of the useful orbits that might be, as you say, Earth-facing, which most are.
Yep, absolutely. So, that's where, my experience in that realm until this upcoming role at True Anomaly has been very limited. We've done, a small amount of space security, space domain awareness, space situational awareness, whatever umbrella term you want to use for it. But it is very important. Knowing what's going on in and around the environments that the satellites operate in is crucially important, not only for orbital debris mitigation or traffic management, however you want to say it there, but also protecting high-value assets, both ours and then other countries want to do the same.
Exactly. So what else would you want to say about the Lockheed side before we switch over to True Anomaly? Because Lockheed is a good example of company that's been with space probably from the beginning, right? It is a often referred to as a legacy company. It doesn't mean old. It means it has a legacy and has been part of space system production for decades and launcher production, right? Because Waterton Canyon, I think, was building Atlas rocket bodies back in the 1950s. That's southwest of Denver now. So
exactly.
What else would you want to characterize as what involved on that side of the business?
Yeah, so there is, like you said, a lot of history there. Waterton campus, where I was based up until last week before transitioning out of Lockheed Martin, was the Waterton campus, which is tucked away behind some hogbacks that eventually go into the foothills, originally chosen to be a mitigated area for Russian or Soviet intercontinental ballistic missiles at the time, that the mountains and hogbacks could provide a natural defense. And again, like you said, since the 50s and 60s, when there was very little out there, the site was chosen to be a Lockheed Martin facility. And like you said, Lockheed has been doing this for a long time. They were some of the original practitioners of satellite technology. I mean, going back to the time where they would help facilitate technologies, they could take pictures and they would drop them into a basket on a plane flying well below. So and that's obviously been upgraded over time as technologies evolved. But Lockheed, not only with that, as well as a lot of other technologies, has been at the forefront of space capabilities for decades, like you said.
Let's talk then a bit more about where you're going to start work. I'm assuming probably next week or, you know, sometime before Christmas here coming up. And tell me a bit about True Anomaly.
Okay. So, yeah, starting next week, took about a week and a half, you know, off and kind of coincided with the holiday season. So it was nice there. But, yeah, going from, you know, one of the legacy companies that's been around for decades and decades to a company that's only been around since early last year and just came out of stealth in April of this year. So only about 90 people right now, probably going to expand a good amount in the near future. But with that said, very new, very lean, and a small amount of folks. So much different environment potentially than Lockheed Martin in many, many ways. And just not necessarily a good or a bad thing, but it's one of those things that is very much at the forefront of their space and trying to solve very tough problems, just like Lockheed Martin is. Different customer set, more Space Force customers than traditional intelligence community. So that will be a new learning experience, something that I'm very unfamiliar with comparatively, but again, a fertile ground to learn. And, you know, Space Force is very new as well. So they're figuring this out as they go forward too, with kind of the best minds in the world at their fingertips.
Well, pick one of those problem set issues, if you can, that we can discuss in an open public environment here, right? Is there one of them more than others that sort of stands out in your mind as being something to focus the resources of, you know, corporate industry and the Space Force on together as partners to try and tackle that problem?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, off the bat, I would say the Mosaic software, a recent win that True Anomaly had for new business was getting more of their Mosaic core space domain awareness software to the customer, the Space Force customers, as a, you know, operational capability to where they could track and maintain where their satellites are and other assets are at any given time. So I think that's key, because I mean, we always talk about, you know, whether it's the Department of Commerce talking about it, Space Force, you know, national security leads, the National Space Council, they're always talking about how do we, you know, mitigate the risk of collision, knowing where things are at all times. What's the best solution there? And I think that is one area where True Anomaly has and can continue to shine, is providing that overall awareness, knowing where things are at, knowing how to mitigate risk, ensuring, as we've again talked about before, if satellites collide and there's the debris field, or if adversaries utilize anti-satellite weapons, how do you potentially mitigate that as well? How do you be aware of it so you can make the next move? And I think that Mosaic software, as well as other capabilities that True Anomaly will put forward, will be increasingly important to help Space Force customers as well as others.
So if I understand right, Mosaic is a software that's going to be doing the analysis and prediction of potential collisions, conjunctions, whatever you want to call it. The data set, is that still produced primarily by government sources that's then made public through the various databases? Or is there an equivalent commercial database of observational data through whatever means or owner-operated provided data about location and such? And where do you get your numbers that then the Mosaic software crunches on?
No, good questions. I'll have to double check on all that. But from everything I've seen so far, it does look like it's a mix to where it's coming from both government and commercial sources, kind of like what you see in the conflict in Ukraine, as well as Israel, just in a different perspective of a lot of the imagery and other capabilities that we're seeing in terms of intel collections coming from companies like Maxar, some traditional government collection. And so I think that is what's informing the databases that Mosaic and other systems are using for True Anomaly and elsewhere.
Now, are you tied in with the Space Information Sharing and Analysis Center that's down in Colorado Springs?
I am. I do know a few of their folks. I have not been able to meet Aaron in person. But with that said, I do know some of their team. I sat on a great presentation by her team a few weeks ago that was put on by the Secretary of the Air Force's team. And it's great. So getting more and more familiar, but really that capability to share, analyze, and solve problems together, you know, across industry, academia, et cetera, I think is critical. And I look forward to only getting more familiar with it as well.
Yeah, I got a very good tour of their facility back this past summer. And Aaron was part of the panel that talked about domain awareness and the cooperation between government and the commercial sector at our workshop, which you weren't able to attend because you were on the road doing work for Lockheed. But it is one of those interesting things that's out there to try and bring the various people together that have information that can, again, crack one of these stickier problems that we're talking about for that affects both the Space Force and the commercial sector. And it's, you know, on the other end of I-25 from where you're located up in Denver, but it's one of those things that Colorado seems to have a good advantage in.
Yep, absolutely. And to correct the record, I was not on work travel. I was actually on personal travel to Sarajevo and other parts of Europe with my wife and mother-in-law who are from there originally. So not on the Lockheed dime, hopefully representing them well, but it was a much more of a personal trip. So highly recommend that area if anyone has a chance to go or if anyone's interested. Great area. Hopefully one day we'll have a space program, both for Bosnia, Croatia, and neighbors, but not yet. So, again, one day.
All right. Well, one of those areas, as I think back of what we've discussed so far, when you look at the issue of space situational awareness and then that added domain awareness component, there's the challenge I think you mentioned before, we maybe discussed in the preparatory comments here, about rendezvous and proximity operations. Can you explain what that is for the audience and why that might be a significant security issue?
Absolutely. So rendezvous proximity operations can mean a variety of things. And again, you know, getting more familiar with what it means, because traditionally I have not operated in this area in Lockheed, but moving on to that role of True Anomaly, where we become more and more familiar with it. But what rendezvous proximity operations means is essentially operations that can occur in and around the area of a satellite or other asset in space by another satellite or asset in space. So at a very basic level, we can think of the space shuttle a few decades ago fixing the Hubble Space Telescope when it was having major issues with its capabilities of the telescope. That was a rendezvous proximity operation with the spacewalk, the Canada arm that was helping to fix the Hubble Space Telescope. That's just one example. It can be on a much smaller scale too, where you have satellites that are doing docking, maybe, you know, eventually orbital refueling. It could also be adversarial too. So at a very basic level, it could be, you know, things like, you know, adversarial satellites or other assets that could come and affect our assets in a kinetic or non-kinetic way. So, you know, RPO capabilities, rendezvous proximity operations, help to, they can be offensive or they can be defensive, and it could, you know, be very, very important to help protect our assets and capabilities in space, as well as allies, to ensure the safety of our equipment and others as well, especially if kinetic effects are used, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this is not necessarily new. People who might be familiar with the James Bond film franchise could think back to, I think it was Dr. No, one of the earliest of the Bond films that featured non-state actor actually sending rocket bodies up and then capturing satellites in orbit and then, you know, hijacking them and bringing them back to Earth. So that concept has been there really from the beginning of the space age. The Gemini program, I think, was intended to be rendezvous and proximity operations for manned capsules as a preparatory stage for Apollo. So we've been doing that for a while, but now it's gotten more sensitive because those were all, other than the Bond example, those were all deliberate and intended to be part of the mission set. The idea of hostile rendezvous proximity operations adds another element to space domain awareness. So the Russians, I guess, the Soviets at the time were so concerned about this, especially you mentioned the space shuttle with the Canada arm out there, that if I remember right, they put a 20-millimeter cannon or something, defensive armament, on one of their early space stations so that if, you know, something were trying to sneak up on them and capture them, they could notionally shoot back. So this is not a new idea.
No, not at all. And it's really, you know, there's that risk and kind of the countermeasures and countermeasures on both sides or multiple sides potentially that, you know, like if you, you know, referencing the Russian mission with the cannon, if they shoot at something and it creates debris, that could immediately affect them as well. So there's kind of pros and cons to the use. And that's where considering the kinetic versus non-kinetic approach can be very important. And it just has different, you know, different considerations and capabilities to look at, especially while building out this mission and, you know, building out the capabilities of the Space Force and allies as well.
Yeah, kinetic use in orbit is something that generally most people want to avoid because of the potential,
exactly,
as you mentioned, for debris creation. The possibility, though, with rendezvous and prox ops is that maybe you could get, if I'm, you know, speaking correctly here from open sources, you get close to something, you could grapple on, and then you could change its orbit, either tow it into a higher orbit, tow it to a lower orbit, do things that were not going to create debris, but would be very malevolent, shall we say, very destructive to the mission of the satellite. So having a greater sight picture of what's going on around you is going to be increasingly important, especially as, you know, thinking about where satellite systems have gone in just the last 10 years, I think you could say they've gotten smaller in many cases, making them harder to track. They've also gotten more maneuverable, and they've gotten more numerous, right? So, you know, the type of work that you talked about doing now as you move over to the new company seems to be extremely relevant for all three of those problems, you know, keeping tracks of ever smaller and capable systems that can maneuver more, and there's just a lot more of them. So good luck with that task as you take it on.
Oh, absolutely. And thanks, Darren. On that note, the, you know, the capabilities and the things you have to consider for the RPOs can affect both the, you know, assets we have as a nation, but also commercial too. I mean, you think of, you know, just notionally, you know, moving around Starlink assets or possibly Maxar assets, or even the assets that will provide digital cable or satellite TV to a variety of customers around the world, you immediately could cut off information access by affecting any of those, and, you know, tossing them in new orbits or, you know, whatever it might be. So there's that and that could lose companies millions of dollars. It could also have millions of dollars in costs that they need to recover the asset in whatever way they need to. So, you know, getting this problem right is very, very important. And there are a lot of considerations, and potential customers that can be affected across the board.
And providing that critical aspect of attribution that system X did this to system Y would be important for deterrence and maintaining a peaceful, stable order in orbit. Because if there's jamming, traditional means of interfering with those satellites right now, barring the kinetic attack, right, which is pretty blunt and to be discouraged, as we mentioned earlier, it would be primarily through jamming, right? So that's going to be something emitted from the Earth's surface and is going to be easier to attribute. I mean, there are issues with attribution, I realize, but you'll see a signal coming from a general point on Earth. That's one way of attributing an attack that you could characterize, that if you took this into space with a very small satellite interfering with another more valuable payload on orbit, you're not necessarily going to know where that came from if you don't have a good sense of what's in orbit and what's getting close to your system. Improving space domain awareness in this fashion would seem to be extremely important for maintaining a peaceful order in orbit and deterrence if need be, right?
Absolutely. Across the board, correct.
What else would you say the future holds? We'll get you into the future-oriented question in a bit, but from the perspective of your new position, is there one thing in particular that you're looking forward to as a problem to being able to wrestle with that you weren't maybe able to do at Lockheed?
So I think off the bat, going back to the basics of, Sun Tzu, who I think we reference a good amount in this industry, is knowing exactly what the battlefield looks like. And with that picture, with that order of battle, then you can develop further, what are the threats? Where can we optimize where we put our assets? Where can we protect them the best? I'm really looking forward to, serving the customers at that level and being able to develop problems that to this point have been very, very difficult to solve. And not to say that there are easy problems to solve, but being able to inform that community and that customer, those customers, I think, will be really, really important. Now, that's where, in having that hands-on approach potentially too, kind of starting very early from a company's founding and being able to build the business from a much more direct level, I think will be really, really impactful. And I think will result in potentially much better solutions as well, and more direct solutions.
I know we've talked around some topics, given the sensitive nature regarding the actual space operations and such, which, that's kind of the nature of the business. We can't get into any great deal, but I hope we will keep detail. I hope we will have piqued the interest of some folks that are out there that might be considering what they're going to do after graduation or commissioning in the case of the academies, and think about what they might do in the commercial or military space sectors. So if they want to know more, they should apply themselves and continue to apply themselves, because it sounds like you took several iterations in this job market, just like every other, to crack through. But I think that people will find that to be a very rewarding area where their interest in space and their interest in security can provide a worthwhile career and provide useful service to the country. So glad you're able to continue your service in civilian form.
It's been an honor, and it's been a great journey so far. And I will say that for any, cadets, young officers, folks outside the Air Force Academy that are interested in careers like this, or just want to chat about space and other things in general, I'm always reachable and more than willing to chat on a variety of subjects, really whatever we can do to help, whether that's through programs like N3SP. I do a lot of volunteer work with the AOG. I just believe in, helping to set people up for the careers. And, I'm a firm believer that there is, no wrong answer when it comes to careers, as long as you're doing something that you think you have a great role in and have the ability to add value and make good changes. So again, more than willing to always help. And then I've heard that Space Force selectees or people who want to be part of the Space Force are now outnumbering pilots of the Air Force Academy. So, I think it's going to be pretty amazing to see how the Space Force evolves and really becomes greater and greater with the capabilities and the people that they're going to bring on board. So very excited to see how that will go.
Let's take that future forward theme here and transition to the question that I always put to anyone that's on the podcast. So that is, in the next 5 years, What change or trend in international or domestic politics, economics, law, technology, or even culture will have the greatest impact on national security, in your opinion?
So it's hard to identify just one. And I think that's potentially by design for the question. I think demographic trends in the next few years to decade plus will be really, really interesting to see not only where the U.S. leads and where it leaves them in terms of demographic trends, but also Europe with, you know, potentially declining populations, especially more so in certain areas of Europe, Africa, especially sub-Saharan Africa with their increases in population, and then the increase in populations in India, as well as potential decrease in China, Chinese population, that could both be positives as well as negatives for all those countries involved. So to see how that affects their space programs, their demographic outlook, what that looks like for their tax base, what it looks like for funding a variety of other programs, or being able to project power both in soft and hard ways for, you know, the U.S., allies, as well as adversaries, what does that end up looking like? So I think that'll be a really determinative trend in the next few years to decade plus. And I think that that could really affect how we not only make our approaches to space, but also cover domestic and international issues closer to home. Because again, these are things that are very, very hard to control. And, you know, sometimes, like as Robert Kaplan will talk about, you know, geography being destiny, you know, demographics can as well. So I think it'd be really interesting to see how that goes and how that potentially also affects political satisfaction as well, which I think is a challenge in a number of countries where, you know, whether rightly or wrongly, citizens are, you know, upset, and that may only exacerbate with demographic trends, either increasing or decreasing populations.
Probably an area where, you know, a similar degree of situational awareness is appropriate, because as you look at the quality of the data, I understand, and it's not certain that any of the data that we're getting out of China has any validity to it to use for projections, because it's all produced for certain purposes to serve the party. So having good population or demographic situational awareness is probably an area that a lot of people are going to get into, if they can even collect the data and write. But this is something that you talked about is a problem, the long lead time.
Absolutely. Hard to detect and hard to even know it's happening until it does. So again, that will be interesting to see how it affects, you know, staffing of military forces too, and that could further affect the ability to staff space programs and project, you know, power, you know, outside of the Earth and the Earth Moon system, which I do think is going to be increasingly important in the next few years to the decades beyond.
Well, the subject of Earth Moon system has come up in a variety of different contexts, so that would be an interesting area to explore later on. And some of the folks that you put in contact from Lockheed that were part of our workshop back in September sort of started to touch on that. So I may follow up on that as a future point of concern, because, you know, that's something most people probably aren't thinking of right now. We start off talking about all those systems that, as you described, were Earth-facing, but there are a certain number that are now outward-facing, and ultimately expansion will be in that direction for space systems. We'll just have to see how that all develops.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, especially as it pertains to, you know, going over to a new role at True Anomaly as well. They are, to what I gather, interested in that arena as well, going beyond, you know, geo into lunar and cislunar. And before I left Lockheed, we did win several efforts in the lunar and cislunar realm. So some of those programs are operating currently, and it's an area that even just a year plus ago, most of the teams under the national security realm, you know, couldn't even fathom that this could be a new market and have the kind of market potential that it does. But it's likely going to be huge, and to be intimately involved with it in the previous role and potentially in the next role, always willing to talk about that as well. And you also have great POCs from Lockheed too that are very much involved in those mission sets.
As a teaser for future topics, we'll have to leave it there with that. And I want to thank Charlie for being part of this conversation and taking the time to outline his career path that's taken him through the Air Force and now into two different ends of the spectrum for space security industry in Colorado. And thank everyone that's been listening here to episode 8 of this N3SP podcast. Hope you've enjoyed hearing about this experience that Charlie's had, again, the Air Force and in commercial industry. And hope you stay tuned for future episodes. Maybe we'll get into cislunar exploration and security and what that means for the future. But in the meantime, if you'd like more information, please go to the website of n3sp.org. Thank you and goodbye.